Here we go. Hello, and welcome to the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power Podcast on the Truth About Leads. I'm your host, Nancy Picala, Director of Online Content for the AMA. We're very excited to welcome our special guest, Dan McDay, to the program today. Dan is President and CEO of PointClear, an Atlanta-based prospect development company that helps B2B companies drive revenue by nurturing leads, engaging contacts, and developing prospects. He's also the author of the new book, The Truth About Leads, and he was named one of the 50 most influential people in sales lead management by the Sales Lead Management Association in 2009 and 2010. If you want to know what Dan is up to, you can find him on Twitter at Dan Dade, and you can also read his blog post at pointclear.com. Dan, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Nancy.
Dan, I want to start out with, because I thought your book was really really interesting because it was brutally honest, I think, of what's happening out there in the B2B landscape. But I'm wondering if you could start out by telling us why you think the lead management process is broken in most B2B organizations today.
I think it comes down to ROI. I believe that you'll find that sales, for the most part, discounts the value of marketing leads, and marketing has been, to some extent, defaulted to a cost-per-lead mentality, meaning that they're kind of told how many leads they need to generate, and it seems year after year their budgets are cut, and as a result, they have less money to spend to generate opportunities for sales. And because, for the most part, they haven't really gotten feedback from sales on opportunities other than kind of general, they're not very good. They get their reward by producing a certain number of leads at a given cost, and sales gets its reward by producing revenue. And unfortunately, that's not allowing for a lot of great communication. And as I say in the book, it's a basic business process that just seems to be broken in most companies.
Absolutely. We see in survey after survey, and especially in the B2B area, that they identify sales and marketing alignment or lack thereof as one of their top three challenges. So why is it you think that it's not getting better if everyone's identifying it as that primary challenge, and what will it take to get there?
It's really the primary reason that I wrote this book, was watching for year after year. I've been in the business that I'm in now for about 20 years, and watching companies, in essence, squander marketing investments, and in the end, they actually are squandering sales investments because of this lack of alignment issue. The reason that I think it continues to exist is because most senior executives believe that when they bring in an executive salesperson or an executive marketing person that, number one, they ought to know what to do, and number two, they ought to be able to get along and, basically coordinate with the other department. And in reality, that doesn't really often happen. So what you have is you have silos developing, where you've got marketing kind of going off on its mission of generating a certain number of leads at a certain cost, and then you've got sales going about its mission of generating revenue, and not a lot of communication between them. There are some real basic business processes between marketing and sales that are missing in most companies, the first of which is a lead, kind of a pre-qualification step, if you will, and then the ability to have leads flow back and forth between sales and marketing when sales is not effective in actually connecting with an opportunity, and also having this function in the middle be responsible for nurturing longer-term opportunities. But this alignment issue, I think the earliest article that I found was back in the mid-90s when this issue of lack of alignment between sales and marketing first occurred, and unfortunately, I don't feel like we've made an awful lot of progress, at least in most companies.
Oh, it certainly seems not. In your book, you also indicate that part of the problem, you think, is that marketing really has been rendered powerless in most companies, leading to expectations that are really out of line in terms of generating leads. And you outline a five-step program for closing that marketing gap. And I'm wondering if you can summarize those key points for our listeners today.
Sure. The first one is really to what I call stopping the carousel on marketing programs. It seems that, money is going out with certainty but with uncertain returns. And it doesn't hurt to shut down some programs or not do programs because of some of the other issues I'll talk about in these five points, but just, make sure that you're doing the high-value activities and cutting back on the low-value activities. In other words, kind of stop, recalibrate, and make sure that the programs that you are running are heading in the right direction. The second one is to plan to crawl, walk, and run. It's funny how companies will say, they'll come to us and they'll say, March the 1st here, we're almost at March the 1st, that they want to run a program that's going to impact Q1 results. And, you know, no company can effectively impact the current quarter's results with current quarter marketing, so you just shouldn't try. The next thing is to pinpoint the market. Many companies broadcast market, or they target too broadly. And we had one client as an example that's been a client now for years, but they had a market research company identify 80,000 targets. And within just a few short months, we actually reduced that to a 30,000 target universe and eventually down to 22,000. Now I think it's around 18,000 targets. And the value in that is that, you know, you want to make sure that you're focusing in on the best prospects, both from the standpoint of it's where you're going to have the highest likelihood of success, and also where you're going to have the best deals. The fourth one is testing your market and testing your offer before you invest. And I can't tell you how many times either agencies or marketing departments will put out a marketing program that really looks more like something that was developed to win an award as opposed to something that will actually create results. And it's possible to test your list and database, to test the communication platforms that you want to use or the media, and also to test the price, the packaging, the terms, the guarantee, the differentiators, et cetera, in the messaging of the offer. And you can test those relatively inexpensively, and they have huge impact on results. Finally, it's measurement. I don't advocate measuring cost per lead necessarily, because I think that's too narrow of a measurement, but you should at least take a look at breaking out the cost. We find companies will spend a lot of money on trade shows, for example. We had one example recently where their cost per lead from a trade show was $36,000 per lead. Yet they were complaining, you know, because we had a $500 cost per lead for just cold outbound calling. And what they failed to take into account is the total cost of putting up the booth and flying everybody to a big city and putting them up in hotels and taking people out for dinners and cocktails and that kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes you have to be at a trade show in order to be competitive. But a lot of times that's not the case. You want to make sure that you spend your money wisely.
Right, absolutely. That's amazing. You know, you also suggest that faulty decision-making by senior management can also contribute to poor lead management. And in the book, you identify seven fundamental truths that that include ineffective strategic direction by management, inappropriate marketing focus, and a lack of effort in engaging advocates, which, frankly, we don't hear a lot about in the B2B space. I'm wondering if you can explain what you mean about these three truths in particular in a little bit more detail.
Sure. At the highest level, the strategic direction by management gets back to the five steps that we just talked about, and that is there's really four things that I talk about, and that is to make sure that you have clearly identified your target market, that you've identified what your offer is, you've defined what a lead looks like within your company, and then you've also established metrics around leads. And there's an expression that's the demand waterfall that talks about how prospects move into opportunities and opportunities move into clients and that kind of thing. It's not as important, at least on the front end, that you use benchmarks for that. It's more important that you actually measure what your results are and then begin to tweak those results from there. And I find that that really only happens at the highest level. I've got an expression that nobody ever built a statue to a committee. And, you know, what that means is that ultimately a senior executive has to step up and make a decision on, you know, here's what our market is. This is what we're selling. This is how we're defining a lead. So if a lead goes over to sales and it doesn't meet that definition, it comes back. But if a lead goes over to sales and it does meet that definition, there's an expectation that sales will actually follow up on it. The second piece of that is the marketing focus is making sure that you understand what the objective of your marketing is. I find that marketing departments tend to have a skewed view of this. They tend to default toward more branding type of marketing as opposed to getting hands raised, you know, identifying the prospects as ready to look at their product or solution. So I think that you want to make sure that you have a blend of marketing activity. And as far as engaging advocates, I think our company is probably as guilty as any of not bringing our clients into the communication process. You'll see over and over again now when selling at various stages in the buying cycle, the peers are an incredibly important force in getting people to move toward a company or away from a company. And so developing what I call the concept of advocacy, where every client, you know, your objective is to make them somebody that will go out and talk positively about you, write about you, you know, point people toward you, that kind of thing. And I think that's an important thing that gets missed.
I do think so, because, you know, often we hear that in B2C, but we don't hear it as much in B2B, where it's just as valued or valuable. So I think that's a great point. You know, one of my favorite chapters of your book is Why Direct Marketing Causes Executives to Lose Their Marbles. Great title, but it also addresses the issue of targeted segmentation and list management. And in it, you compare the way executives buy lists today to potentially buying a jar of marbles without knowing really what they're getting inside. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that. What steps can B2B organizations take today to improve their list management processes?
That's just a great question. I actually was just on the telephone with someone who said he was evaluating list brokers, and I said, you know, I don't envy you, because that's just a terrible task to have to do. And it's because there's just so much uncertainty and so much unknown, and frankly, so much abuse in the list industry. And that, by having said that, there are some great list vendors out there. You just have to make sure you pick the right ones. But the top of the list of what I would recommend is that you start small. We always talk about evaluating your current client base and determining to what extent that mirrors what you want to sell going forward. And to the extent it's different, because what you find is many companies say, well, our client base is currently looks like this, but we think we can sell bigger deals. The problem is, if you haven't sold bigger deals, then you really have no model built to sell bigger deals. So sometimes that can be more of a pipe dream than a strategic decision. So the first thing is to start small by evaluating your current customers, and then go out and do a gap analysis, identify what we refer to as birds of a feather. And by doing that, I don't mean taking, you know, thousands or tens of thousands of names that have come in over the years that are in your database and deciding, you know, we're going to go clean all those up. That's typically going to be a career-ending decision to do that. What you want to do is you want to model what your current clients, or at least what the model of what you want your current clients to look like. Go out and find out what the gaps are. And then on an intuitive basis, from, you know, what you would consider to be, I call them the least expensive barrels of oil, where you can prospect less expensively and expect a greater return, go after those first, and then you work your way down intuitively on the list. And that's really the way to segment, stratify, and it's kind of like that jar of marbles. If the marbles are all in there loose and there's no order to them, you really have no idea of what to expect. But if the marbles are stratified, you know, from the most expensive marbles at the top to the least expensive marbles at the bottom, then you have some idea of what you're going to get at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great points. You know, in the book, you also talk about the importance of implementing a multi-touch strategy to engage prospects. And in fact, you indicate that you've conducted some research that revealed that unless you're reaching prospects with at least 9 individual touches, including a minimum of 2 email messages, you're really not achieving the results that you could. You also suggested that something I was surprised at, that voicemail and email are good touch points for senior-level executives. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what you think is needed in order for B2B organizations to incorporate a multi-touch strategy into that lead generation processes. And indeed, do you think that most B2Bs are doing this?
No, I don't think most B2B companies are. As a matter of fact, I was on the phone earlier today with a company that said that they had been told that they should never leave a voicemail because the voicemails would never be returned, and that's really completely opposite of what we found. I think fundamentally, what we recommend is that you test and measure, and by that I mean you test the number of touches, the type of touches, the number of cycles, and you test different messages. What we find is that somewhere between 10 and 30% of the opportunities that we identify for our clients are as the result of a callback or an email reply that is getting somebody to basically raise their hand and say, yes, I want to take the conversation to the next step. In fact, my favorite story in that regard is a client where we were talking to the Fortune or to the top 50 utilities in the country, and it was specifically the CFO at the top 50 utilities. And on the 42nd touch, the CFO at the fourth largest utility called us back and said, "Don't stop calling me. You're my conscience. I want to talk to you. I've just been extremely busy. If you'll call me back 2 weeks from Tuesday at 10 o'clock, I'll take that call." 5 months later, that closed for $1 billion for our client. And many guys would say, hey, you know, if you called me 42 times, there's no way I would have ever called you back. Well, we didn't, of course, call 42 times. We invested 42 touches. That was some navigation dials, calling and leaving some voicemails, working through the admin, and eventually sending some emails and getting a storyline in front of that individual so that he or she can make a decision about whether or not it's going to be worth their time to have a follow-up conversation. So I strongly recommend that you test and measure the touch cycle and that you don't depend on one medium. In other words, I call it the silver tongue devil syndrome, that if you have somebody that's good on the phone or good face-to-face, you just get them in front of as many people as possible. Unfortunately, not all of us are silver tongue devils, so what we have to do is we have to use some of the other media, like voicemail, email, and even direct mail in many cases, can be very helpful in putting your story in front of the right prospects at the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. You know, we can't really have a conversation on lead management or generation today without talking somewhat about social media, and I'm wondering where you see the role of social media platforms, where they play in lead generation for today's B2B sales force.
Well, social media is just like websites were years ago, is a great equalizer, meaning that, you know, of course, if you're a famous movie star or an athlete, you know, you can get a million plus followers. I think I did some calculations here not too long ago that Steve Jobs had, I think, 33 million followers or something like that. So, but, you know, the problem is if you're not out on the social media, then you're less likely to get found, particularly recently here with Google announcing that social media was playing a strong part in how it presented pages to individual consumers. I will take a step back, though, and I'm not necessarily in the majority with this recommendation, but I recommend the following as kind of an order of priority. Your first is to make sure that your CRM or your Salesforce automation, basically your database or the heart of your business, is working and is accurate and it's functional, meaning that everybody's agreed on how a prospect moves from one stage to the next or how a customer is addressed next by somebody in the company from an upsell or cross-sell standpoint. The second is to make sure that the website is communicating to your prospects and to your clients as effectively as it possibly can. I think all of us struggle with that. How do we get more page views? How do we get people on the website longer? But I'll put it in terms that somebody told me just a week or so ago. This is a guy that works with a lot of consumer goods companies, and he said, you know, I told a brand manager that we could get somebody to spend 1 minute on their page, and the guy said, you can't believe how valuable that is to me. So if somebody's actually visiting your website for a minute, then you need to make sure that you optimize that. The next thing down is blogging, and it's because blogging is something that you can control. It's what I refer to as kind of earned marketing. You know, paid marketing is pay-per-click or some of the other marketing you do. This earned marketing is, you know, that you're out in the blog sphere and you're beginning to get followers and you're earning some respect and they recommend you to somebody else, that kind of thing. And blogs are a great way of improving your search engine optimization rankings, as well as a great way of being in dialogue with your market. The next one down from a B2B standpoint is LinkedIn. Although there's many more Facebook users than LinkedIn users right now, about the same number of adult Americans use LinkedIn every day as use Facebook. And LinkedIn is just a tremendous tool that most companies haven't really looked at. And then absolutely you should jump into tweeting. You should get into communities. I recommend that everybody goes out and joins a community, not of peers, but of prospect types, so that they can first listen and understand what's going on in those communities and then begin to kind of, somebody put it that it's like being polite at a cocktail party. You know, you don't jump in and race around and get a bunch of attention on the front end. You listen and you drop in on conversations and eventually you get included in conversations, and that's the best way to use social media.
Yeah, I think that's a great formula for B2B in the approach. You know, you mentioned in that last question a little bit about marketing automation, and you predicted that you think this year is the year that sanity returns to lead generation, particularly as it pertains to marketing automation solutions. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on marketing automation in B2B. Do you think they're relying a little too heavily on these technology solutions to get them to the performance they want to get to, or where are we in that?
I think it is. I think it's a lot like the mid-90s with Salesforce automation and eventually CRM, that you know, companies felt that it was the holy grail. I remember reading someplace that one of the hot solutions at that time was selling for about $15,000 a seat, and companies couldn't implement it fast enough. And the dream there was is that, you know, an individual wouldn't take the Rolodex with them when they left the company, and the company would be able to retain control and a snapshot at any given point in time over the market that they were covering. And the reality is that that's still an objective that's not really been met by many companies. And it's the same thing now with marketing automation. I'll tell you that the marketing automation vendors are among the most aggressive marketers that you'll ever come across. And they certainly don't recommend to their clients or on their own behalf, they certainly don't just wait for leads to come to them through the marketing automation platform. I've got a favorite line about this, that's not every senior executive you know, wants to be treated like the human equivalent of a pinball, only getting attention when they've hit the right bumpers and scored enough points. And as a matter of fact, the more senior the executive, the less likely they are to depend on web research, as an example, or depend on clicking on white papers to do their research. They're more likely to depend on peers, and they're more likely to reach out to a trusted vendor someplace and try to get the skinny, so to speak, on, you know, what's really going on, how could this really help me, that kind of thing. So I think marketing automation is very important. We use it. We like it. But we also feel it can be overused, and it can be used in such a way that it becomes a black box where leads go in one end, and if out the other end don't come the right opportunities, then it can be a real problem. As a matter of fact, we feel that field sales right now is beginning to revolt against some of the black box marketing automation leads, because they really are just not qualified. They're not high enough level. They're not representing the right deals, and they're missing some deals that their competitors are getting because they're so dependent on it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think you're right on the money on that one. You know, my last question here as we wrap up this conversation on the truth about leads is, in your opinion, what do you think the top three steps are that you'd suggest to a B2B organization to take this year if they really want to get serious about moving that needle on improving lead generation performance and generating revenue?
I think it's another great question. I think you'll find that more and more companies are going to move to identifying strategic accounts and deploying against those accounts differently than they do the rest of the accounts. And whether it's 20 or 30% of the total prospect base, that the strategic accounts are going to need to be marketed to and sold to differently. So that's the first thing, is that taking the strategic accounts out of the day-to-day marketing and sales management and putting them into kind of a class of their own. And by that, I mean leveraging at multiple levels. You know, it goes back to some of the old sales methodologies, but the president talks to the president, and the senior VP of marketing talks to the senior VP of marketing, and the SVP of sales talks to the SVP of sales, that you're hitting these companies at multiple levels in the organization and developing relationships. I think the second important thing is setting up a process to pass leads back and forth from sales to marketing. Right now, marketing throws leads over the fence. Sales either picks them up or doesn't pick them up. The ones that don't get picked up just kind of lay on the floor and they just go away. I mean, there's nothing that happens with them. And what should happen is there should be a process in place for sales to be required to either provide feedback that it's no good for some reason and send it back to marketing, or that they're going to take ownership and accountability for managing that. It's what I think I may have referred to as sales lead and marketing lead purgatory, where these leads just kind of sit in a never-never land and nothing ever happens with them. We need to get those leads back to a function that's responsible for nurturing them or requalifying them or doing whatever is necessary to get them back out into the hands of sales. And by the way, I'm not down on sales there. Sales, for the most part, does an excellent job. They work very hard, but their role is not to spend 42 touches trying to reach a contact. Their role is to engage contacts and begin to put them through the sales process. And then I guess lastly, because we talked about marketing automation and because marketing automation is going to be important going forward, just make sure that you use a heavy dose of human intervention. Don't wait for all of the opportunities to come out, you know, through the scoring system. Do what I call a null test, which is take a percentage of those names that you're running through marketing automation and put them into a special class where you use more human intervention rather than less, and see if the results dictate doing that in more cases. It's just another one of those methods of testing that make a lot of sense.
Yeah, those are really, really great points. I think you hit a few things that give any B2B organization some thought and at least can get started on making some improvements this year in this area, which is so important. These have been really great insights about a new way of looking at lead generation and sales and marketing alignment in B2B organizations. We've been talking today to Dan McDade. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for listening to this edition of our AMA podcast series. I hope it's been a good learning and listening experience for you. Look for information on other upcoming podcasts by visiting marketingpower.com/podcast. And make sure you sign up for our feed on Marketing Power so you're aware of all the podcast series available to you. For information about the book by Dan McDade called The Truth About Leads and how to purchase a copy, visit the online AMA bookstore. Until next time, I've been your host, Nate Spicala. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.